everyone. Welcome to an Atarific edition of ARG Presents. I am Atari Aaron, joined by a man who, well, let's just say he's not the biggest Atari fan, but he's going to give it a whirl. I give you the Brent.
I don't know. I would say I'm up there.
You're up there with the Atari?
No, I'm floating above the sky.
Yeah,
flying around.
You know, this is a celebration today, Brent.
Yes.
Of a show that got the axe. The axe. Just about, about 5-6 months ago now, I got the hammer. Boat dropped the hammer on this show. In fact, Boat creates, Boat destroys. That's how Boat operates, Brent. He's sort of like Thanos, you know what I'm saying? And this one got the axe. And we really didn't get give this show much love back in the day. It was sort of an in and out sort of affair. We were in, we were gone. But the Atari 1200 XL, of course, one of the many, many systems in the Atari pantheon. But before we get into the Atari 1200 XL, Brent, you wanted to talk to the people. Please address your people, sir.
You know, I have been trying to do some merchandise for this show for quite a while, right? And I finally did it. I finally got a beautiful lanyard. Aaron, if you could put that on still cam. a beautiful ARG-themed lanyard that I hope to give to the world if they wanted to purchase it. It has logos of our top 10 shows and,
surprising.
Our slogans and a couple things that are all us. And some people need, like, when I worked at Dow, I really needed a lanyard, and I wore one all the time. And this one has a nice clip-off clip. So we did the legwork. We got it in to check the quality. And I think you'll agree, Aaron, the quality was really good.
The quality is
excellent. It's a fashionable lanyard, and it's strong as steel. And we can't sell it.
Bam. Another
once
triumph,
again,
Brent.
Once again, Printer Studio, to which we got this through, and don't get me wrong, I love Printer Studio. It's not really their fault. Not that we're endorsed by them in any way, but if there's an interest, if we can get 10 people to commit to wanting one of these, I will personally order in bulk and send out to people. So if you have an interest in that, you can, email us
argpresents@mail.com,
and we'll put a link in the description of this to a picture of the lanyard so you can see it and some information. So if that's your thing, hit us up. If we get enough orders, we'll make this happen one way or another.
We had to lead the show with this. I'll tell you why. It's not because that Brent produced something that can't be sold. It's the fact that he did, in fact, produce some merch, which I've been begging for. Listen, I have no illusions of being a big merch dealer, but I've been begging for like a t-shirt or something. And Brent finally went down, put in the hard work in a product that we cannot sell.
Yeah.
So you've got to give him credit.
To be fair, this is the second time this has happened.
You are the artistic Forrest Gump. Well done. But it is beautiful. It is nice. And solid as steel. If steel is fabric, but yes.
Fabricy and prone to ripping and tearing, I suppose. That's unlike steel.
So there you go. If you're interested in the lanyard, drop us an email at argpresents@mail.com. Back to the business at hand, Brent. We spun the wheel last week. We made the exciting deal. The locked piece was spun, and we have the Atari 1200 XL based on our fallen show. So, you know, I don't recall if Boat and me ever did this, but I thought that would be kind of interesting just to look at the actual computer, the Atari 1200 XL, because in the range of Atari computers, this is a kind of a goofy one, sort of obscure and wacky, in my opinion. So this was released in 82, okay? Now, Brent, I want to talk about the release date on this. This is the Atari 1200 XL.
Right.
Okay. So I got a list here of when these Ataris came out. This one was released in 82. So to put it in perspective, the 400, the 800 came out in 79. Okay. So late in 79.
Okay.
Now you would think, okay, the Atari 1200 XL is going to be on down the line. Incorrect. It came out in 1982, right? So it was basically the computer that came out after the 400 and 800. That surprised me, to be honest with you, because in 83, then you had the Atari. This is the perennial computer. When you talk about the Atari 8-bit, you think about the Atari 800 XL. That's what I think of. It came out in 83.
Yeah, I agree.
So it came out after this machine, as did the 600 XL, the 65 XE, and on and on and on. So this was actually a pretty early machine in the chain. This thing, of course, ran on the MOS 6502C and had a speed of 1.79 megahertz. You had your Pokey chip for sound, your Antic chip for video. These are famous chips for the Atari. This thing shipped with 64K ROM as opposed to 1200K, in case you're wondering. That's what the name meant. And you had a color, 16 color screens with 16 intensities, Brent.
Ooh.
You want to take a guess, my friend, at the asking price for this thing in the USA. By the way, this wasn't sold in the UK because it's incompatible with the PAL system. I've got a price here that's listed as June of 83. Now, this computer's listed as coming out in 82. I'm going to assume this came out late in 82. All right.
Yeah, but probably one of those end of the year deals.
I don't have a exact month. But what do you think this sold for in US dollar bills in June of 83?
I'm going to say $8.99.
Okay. A good guess, but wrong. So incredibly wrong, Brett, because you blew it again. This thing came out June of 83, $599, which is a pretty good deal, I think.
I think that's 83.
Yeah.
That's not horrible. That's not horrible for what you're getting.
It's not horrible. No, I agree with you on that one. Now, just for fun, I priced the 1200 XL on eBay. Now, this is not the 8-bit I would buy. And I think Boat would back me up on this, despite the fact that he has one and loves it. You're better off buying one of the later models. I've got, for example, the XEGS, which is a model that's well down the line from this one. And so what you're getting there is it's newer. You know what I'm saying? Because you're talking about computers from 79, 80, 82. That's pretty old. This one's a little bit newer than that. But I would at least, at the bare minimum, I think I would get the 800 XL. So that's the one I would go with if you're going to get into the 8-bit era. And I've got one of these gimmicks on mine, the Uno cart, that does a great job of keeping me playing all the games. That's what I used to play this week. But anyway, if you wanted to pick one of these up on eBay, I saw them go for as low as $150. And if you get one new old stock in the box, you could pay upwards of $350. Brent, we haven't talked about 8-bit Atari, I don't think, ever on the show with you. What do you recall from your days of playing that? And do you have any favorite games? Because I know you did play some of it.
Well, this was one of those go to your neighbors and play, because we never owned one.
That's right. Our neighbor had one.
And I vividly remember playing Blue Max and starting the tape to load, going out and playing soccer, and then coming back, it failed, and then loading it again and going out and playing soccer, and eventually playing for about 15 minutes until my neighbor's parents kicked us out of the house because it was dinner time.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because I was listening to Rob Flacco Harris' show this week, You Don't Know Flack, and he was talking about Tron, and this blew my mind, Brink, and you'll understand what I mean here. Rob talked about a game he played with his buddies where they went out and played Tron in the yard with Frisbees. Does that sound familiar?
Tron's Deadly Disking, yeah.
And we would do that. I distinctly remember doing that while waiting for games to load on our buddy's Atari.
Yep.
That just goes to show you, great minds think alike, apparently. By the way, Rob's show this time around, it's always good. This time it's really good for Tron, so check him out. When I think back on my favorite 1200 my favorite 8-bit Atari games from this generation, we used to play a lot of games like Miner 2049er and Zaxxon, and we would play remember the last Starfighter game that they had on there? That was a lot of fun. I remember playing that.
Isn't this where we also played Cool Cats a lot?
Alley Cat.
Alley Cat. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is. We played it quite a bit. We would play anything they had, to be honest with you. And it's funny because that's where I actually played one of today's games. So, which is, I remembered it when I saw it as I looked through a big list of games. We'll get into that in a minute. So, yeah, the Atari 8-bit, a system that was around forever, it's got software for days. I mean, it goes on and on.
It does.
So it's a great thing to look into if you want to go back. And the funny thing is the software ran the game. It went on for, the thing was around for so long that it just developed a huge amount of software. Plus, the Atari community today is massive. It's a massive community. And so there's always new stuff coming out, new hardware, and sort of like the Coco or the C64, they've made the entry into this pretty easy for people that aren't like schooled with Atari, the OS or whatnot. You can just use like an Uno cart, like I've got, load the stuff up, play it without actually having to do anything that involves learning or being smart or knowing what you're doing. So all my favorite stuff. So, with that in mind, Brent, we were tasked in honor of our fallen show to choose a couple games that would well represent said
for
show.
Each other.
And yeah, that's true. We did. It was Bizarro Week, and so we actually picked. This was Bizarro Week at the way this went down. Do you want to, since you're going to lead us off this week, do you want to explain what exactly you did to pick my game and vice versa? Because I think it's an interesting story.
Absolutely. You picked Electrician. You came up pretty early and said, Brent, you're playing Electrician. And I was like, Electrician, let me look into this game. Let's see what's going on, right? And as I'm searching through the literature and some information about it, I find that this game was bundled with the other game that we chose, New York City, The Big Apple. And I started reading a little bit about that game, and I was like, well, this is an easy choice. So I made Aaron play New York City, and it's the only way it was available on the Atari that I could find, at least, was the two pieces of software bundled together.
Yeah, they were on the opposite sides of the disc or tape, respectively, I believe.
Yes.
Certainly the disc.
So let's dive into Electrician for the Atari system. One thing to note, this was also released for the Famicom disk system.
That was stunning to me.
but we're not going to go into any of that. So if that's a show for another time.
That don't you find that that's an interesting thing?
It
because
is.
Because I wouldn't call this game a well-known game. The fact that someone in Japan found it and decided that this would work great there on the disc system is surprising to me. You know,
it
but
is
I can
a little
why.
Bit to me as well, but I can also see why. Exactly. Yeah. This was developed and published by Synapse Software. The designer for this was David Bunch. And if that name rings a bell at all, it might be because he also did the 1988 game Skate or Die. So that's a big, cool classic.
No kidding. I didn't know that. That's the one
you've heard of.
No kidding. All right.
So this was released for the Atari back in 1984. And you play as an electrician named Richard Light. And you're totally tasked with running around and rewiring houses to get them back up and running. That is your whole goal in the game. And how do you do this? You are put into a house that has no lights, and you will run platform style, left and right, up and down ladders, running wire behind you. And you take this wire and you physically reach up and attach it to the places into the ceiling that have, you know, lights and whatnot, or light sockets or different electronics. Or down in the floor below to hook up that apartment. It's basically apartment buildings. And you have to run through all the floors of the building, hooking up power to all these things. And once you wire the house completely, you'll get a key to go to the next building and do the same thing. In your way, of course, as it always is, you have your different bits of baddies. In this game, you have worms, and the worms are mostly harmless, except they will eat your electrical wire. And basically, if the wire gets severed, that means the connection's no longer there. You have to go back and repair it. But otherwise, worms are no problem.
I thought they were snakes. Are they worms?
They are worms, yep.
Okay.
Then you have mice. Mice will do the same thing. They'll chew through your wire. But mice will also kind of shove you around. If you are running and a mouse runs into you and you're both facing each other, you won't die, but you'll get pushed. You'll get pushed down the room. And this is bad because at the edge of every room where the ladder is, you could fall to your death. The Richard's got a little bit of longevity to him because he can fall two or three floors and still be okay. But if you fall from far enough, it will kill you. So that's really the main threat against the mice. Of course, they also chew through wires. In later stages, you'll run into spiders. Spiders are the first super deadly enemy because they're poisonous spiders. Not only will they eat through wires, but if they touch you, they'll kill you dead. You've also got bats. Bats will physically, apparently these bats are on some kind of evil steroid.
Yeah.
Because they will physically pick you up from wherever you're standing and fly you to some other part of the level and then drop you off. And sometimes it doesn't matter. You know, sometimes it's even helpful. But a lot of times they'll take you right over to the old ladder shaft and drop you. So they're super annoying. The only way to kill the enemies outright completely dead is once you are wired in, if they go to chew the wire, they'll get electrical shocked and get zapped. So you want to wire up the house as fast as possible to zap the enemies. Except your last in-house enemy is Spark. And Spark will actually travel as an electrical surge through the wiring that you already have in place. And if you touch it, it will zap you and kill you. Now, if there's a break in your wiring, because you're not continuously laying wire, you actually hit a button to put the wire down. So if there's a gap in your wiring, the electricity will stop. But if not, it will just keep circling around the building and you can kind of jump and dodge and duck out of the way, but eventually it's going to get you. It's a super deadly enemy. So you've wired up the house. You've completed your first building. What do you do now? Well, you take the key and you go into the world's largest basement. Apparently, all these apartment buildings that you're fixing the electricity in are all connected by this huge universal basement.
I thought it was a sewer.
Nope, it's a basement. At the very bottom, where there's a boat that'll kind of let you fast travel,
yeah,
even though it's super deadly, that is what's considered the sewer.
I see.
The rest of it is all one continuous basement between these dwellings. So, of course, whenever you have an underground basement, what are you going to have? Especially one that's connected to an open sewer, you're going to have alligators. The alligators will roam around down there. And to be completely honest, they're mostly harmless.
Yeah.
You can easily jump on them, but every time you jump on them, Aaron, they get a little bit faster.
I
didn't know that at the time, and I pounced on one for a while, and he started moving pretty quick, but they're still super easy to dodge. The basement part is a little bit maze-like. You have four floors, including the sewer, and it's dark, so you've got to shine your flashlight to get around. And you'll keep running into walls at the end of these rows. And then you'll have to go backtrack and find a ladder to go down or up. And eventually get to the next apartment building that you have to wire it up. Incredibly clever game. Incredibly fun mechanics. Laying wire down sounds boring. But it's actually incredibly fulfilling whenever you get a room wired up and the whole room comes on at the same time and you get this little like electricity turned on noise. You can also get bonus items whenever you complete a room. Sometimes the spirit of the electronic device that you're wiring up will come to life and float down. If you collect it, you get an extra man. I don't know what it's about, but it's kind of neat. The sound in this game, Aaron, off the charts good.
Yeah.
All of it is incredibly good. It handles good. It plays good. I know you're dying to get in here, Aaron. I want to say one more thing. The biggest negative about the game, and I don't know if you ran into this, the learning curve, the ramp up in difficulty is off the charts. It's so unfortunate that a game of this incredible quality will allow you to get through a couple levels and then punish you, absolutely punish you with overwhelming amounts of enemies. Did you also run into that, Aaron?
It does get difficult. I mean, there's no doubt. I'll say, first of all, you know, our as you know this, Brent, our dad was an electrician.
Yes.
And so I doubt he had this much fun at work. And I don't think wiring a house is quite, I don't think this is exactly the way you do it. But I have to say, this is a game that it's one of those games that I forgot about, to be honest with you. And so when I was flipping through names of Atari games, just to kind of get some ideas, I saw that and I thought, wait a minute, electrician. And when I booted it up, instantly I was like, oh yes, this is one we played at when we were babysitting, or you know, when I was hanging out at the neighbor's house.
Right.
They had this one. I don't know how much we played it. But this game is super, this is your classic 80s game. It's super clever. It's super original, you know, and it's well implemented. And it takes advantage of the Atari in every conceivable way. I mean, it really looks good. It plays 100% solid. Controls are great. The levels with the flashlight are good. They're good. The wiring levels are outstanding.
Yes.
They're much more fun.
Yeah. The basement segments are a way to get from point A to point B without it just being here's level two.
Yeah. But
there is a little bit of a puzzle element about it, because you collect a key at the end of every level that might not necessarily go to the next house in line.
Yeah, and that
sometimes
threw me
you have
off
to go two
first.
Houses away. Yeah.
When you get to the actual wiring level, it's just the best. It is. It's very satisfying to wire up an area and have it come on. Occasionally, you chase down a TV guy that jumps out. But I love it. The enemies are just, it's very classic. It's a very Activision-like game. That's what it looks a lot like, an Activision game to me. Some parts of it remind me, and especially in the lower levels, remind me of Hero graphically, you know, the way it looks. But everything's nice and chunky and good looking. You know, the enemies are very annoying. I like the fact that at first the enemies don't really screw you personally.
Right.
I like the fact that when you get a house wired and the enemies go over to do their usual shtick, they just get fried.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Because screw them. You can also just run over those worms and just kind of mush them. But they come back to life, but you still mush them. Of course, you got to have bats, you got to have rats, you got to have all the usual crap that you would have that's all in there. I just think this game is great. And you can tell right away it's good. If you watch, I don't know if you watch the very opening screen of this game, but on the title screen, it says electrician in these big, huge neon letters on top of a building. And one of the letters is burn out. And the electrician climbs up a ladder and goes up and fixes the logo.
Yeah. He tries fixing it. You can see he's trying to monkey with it for a while.
Yeah.
And then he just gets frustrated and kicks it.
Yeah.
And turns it back on.
See, that is the kind of thing that you don't necessarily expect or need, but it just shows that someone cared enough to do it. I love that stuff.
A couple other things in that same vein. Your point, for lack of a better word, is kilowatts. And it's represented by these dial heavy presentation.
Yeah.
Which always has movement going on.
I had no idea what that stuff meant.
Yeah. And the character himself, very endearing. I mean, he looks like just a normal, regular blue jumpsuited dude.
Yeah.
Running around doing this stuff. Amazing, amazing presentation. Really, you know, enjoy that.
The bottom level of where the sewer, you said the sewer actually is.
Yeah.
There are elements of that that remind me of Bagman.
Where absolutely. You have to, yeah, where you can grab one of the bars.
Yeah, because, you know, in Bagman, that mine cart comes under, you have to grab the bars and hang on until the thing. The funny thing about that level is I could get on the boat, I could grab the bar, but I could never successfully get off the bar and back on a boat. Pretty much, if I was on the bar, I was pretty much boned.
Oh, really? I didn't have any problem with it. Although,
I didn't go down in the
say,
sewers until
I didn't go down there much.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Had to. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I stayed away from that. You know, it's funny. Normally, a game like this, I would dock it for taking up a third of the screen with some baloney, which this one does. But this game, the way that this thing is set up, the gameplay area looks fine. It's plenty big.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
Like, so you don't feel like you're getting screwed with that the top part being taken up.
To be completely honest, I never even thought about a third of the screen being, you know, nothing.
I'm pretty sure that's why they put all those spinning. I mean, we know the dials up there are to represent your meter, which I think is clever, frankly. And of course, you want that thing to go up as fast as possible. That's because you're wiring this sucker up. But I think that's a clever thing to add to that big empty area right there. I thought that was pretty smart.
Oh, absolutely.
I think this game is really. I'm not just saying that. I think this game's a triumph. I think this is a game that deserves more love. And the fact that you can see why they chose to port this, because it's a game that I can see getting over big in Japan. They loved Load Runner and stuff. They love these kind of puzzly platformers. And this right here is great. It does get harder as you go up, but it does. It's a clever sort of hard. They add enemies. They add the speed of enemies. There are more coming. Those bats. The old bat that carries you to a new area, those little suckers suck, you know, but it's good that it's in here. It fits the theme of the thing, you know. I really enjoyed this one. I have to give this an enthusiastic endorsement from good old A.
I agree with you. This is something absolutely you want to go out and emulate for yourself.
Yeah.
Tremendous amount of fun. A few Easter eggs, Aaron, before we wrap this one up. There is an anti-pirate message on the disc that says, "Attention all pirates. If you are clever enough to copy this program, please think of me, the programmer, and send what you think it is worth to David Bunch," and then it has his address.
Oh, I wonder if you ever got anything from pirates. I'd wager not.
Well, I hope so. The game also has an unfortunate bug where if you try to go into the eighth house, most people getting that far, and eight is the final house, will encounter a bug that will crash the game. Oh. And this is not an emulation bug. This is a bug with the actual code. Of course, as the modern times do, they have fixed this bug in the ROM systems that you can get. So you can play the complete game if you're good enough to do so. But yeah, the original code has a flaw that will crash on the last house, which is kind of unfortunate.
Very interesting. We did have some reviews for this bad boy come in along the old Discord. Our own John Bodevkar Schaller took a look at this game. He writes, "I can't believe I'd never heard of this one before." By the way, I'm proud of that because John is Commander Atari. "Electrician is a great concept for a game. Connecting sockets while avoiding enemies and illuminating rooms is the stuff someone like me, who's a big fan of Trash Man and other real-life occupation video games, loves. The underground section, though, while adding variety, seemed needlessly long and not very much fun. The FDS version of this game adds some additional visual flair, such as a background city skyline and some much-needed background music, but doesn't improve on the gameplay. So I give my unconditional recommendation for this game to all the former fans of 1200XL out there. He rates it above average."
Yeah, oh, this certainly, yeah.
Our good buddy Frodo NL writes, an interesting and quite well-executed game that could have been better if they'd left out, or at the very least shortened, the basement-slash-sewer sections. The main gameplay in the buildings, while basically very simple, is just plain fun enough variation in the pests to keep it so. While the Famicom Disk System port has some graphical updates, I actually prefer the graphical style of the Atari version. 7.5 out of 10 from our good buddy Frodo. So, some ringing endorsements there of this game. And I agree. I think this is a fun one that everyone can enjoy.
Absolutely. This is one that you need to go emulate, people. You need to go and play it.
Yeah, I agree.
If you can find this for purchase, oh my gosh, especially with the combo package, absolute buy. Absolute
yeah, that's the one. The one thing about these games, if you find them for sale in the States, you're getting both of them.
Yeah.
So, not too bad. So, nice work, Brent. And by the way, nice work me for picking that for you. So, good job me. I'll pat myself in the back there. So, of course, you, being at Bizarro Week, you picked for me a game which I had seen but had never played and know nothing about. And it was the first time for me. Of course, we're talking about New York City, the Big Apple, Brent. Now, this game came to us again from Synapse Software, as you would, you can imagine, since they did the other game on this collection. Designed by a fellow named Russ Siegel. He was responsible for a game I have heard of called Picnic Paranoia. I've not played that, but I have heard of it. And he programmed the 8-bit version. This also had a C64 release, Brent, and it was that one was done by Greg Nelson. I looked at both versions, and I can tell you the Atari version is by far the superior version of this game. This was released in 84, so right around the same time yours was, because they're on the same disc.
Yeah.
So, what is New York City, the Big Apple? Well, the Big Apple, it's a big game, Brent. It's a big, huge game. In this game, and it's funny, I had to look to figure out what exactly was going on in this. You control a fellow named Ed Hick, who decides to take a day trip to New York City in his red Atomic Plymouth Continental. All right, in case you were wondering. So Ed comes in to try to see the sights of New York City. All right, that's the basics for this game. As a tourist, you have to visit all 12 locations in New York, and it within a time limit, an alleged time limit, which I doubt anyone's ever seen the end of. The locations, what you've got here is an overhead view of New York City that you drive around in. You start on the bridge into New York. There's only one bridge in New York, Brent, and you're on
And there's no going back. I tried.
Well, I'll tell you something. Well, I'll get to that later, but there is a glitch right on that bridge, which we'll get to in a little bit. These are the locations that are rendered in this game. You've got the Empire State Building, the UN Building, Grant's Tomb, the World Trade Center, Citicorp Center, City Hall, the Post Office, the Automat, a Mart, a bank, the subway, and the Post Office. So you've got all this stuff there. What do you do? Well, you have a car. And this is, in fact, someone in chat just did it, Mitsuyama. This game is often compared to the 1984 version of Grand Theft Auto. Well, there are some similarities. You're in an overhead map. I like to think of this as like a giant scrolling version of the Ghostbusters map, if you've ever played that. You know, it's a big city map that you drive around on. There's a two-lane streets that make up the grid of this town. And you drive in your car around town. When you get to a point where you want to get out, you park your car and your little man comes out and you're out. And then you could go in the building. And when you go into the building, it sort of zooms in, you know, to the very impressive graphically, Brent. What were your initial thoughts when you booted this thing up? Because you'd not played this before either, I'm guessing.
No. I was, when I very, the very first time you play this, you are confused.
Yeah.
Until you figure out what's actually supposed to be going on, you will be confused. I want to hold off because I want to see what you think about this game before I give my full on review.
So, what do you do in this game? Well, it's funny. The GTA style driving area is sort of a facade, a front end for a many games that appear. You are given the task of going to certain locations at the top of the screen, and you drive your car there. Now, getting to the locations is sort of its own game. You drive around town in your car, and you try to avoid other drivers because everything in this game costs you money. Okay, yeah. Hitting other car costs you money. There's a big red car that if it runs over you or your car, it basically sends you to the hospital.
Yeah, it's,
you
have it's to a pay, bigger car than you.
You have to pay more money, you know. Sometimes if you park at a wrong spot, your car will be towed. You've got to walk across town. So it is very similar to actual New York. Everything costs a ton. You know, it's actually sort of ridiculous. Anyway, once you're given the task of being sent somewhere, you drive your car to that spot. The city is randomized every time, with a few exceptions. Central Park is always sort of centrally located. It's the only area in the game that takes up two city blocks, as opposed to the one. But basically everything else, and there is no similarity to the actual New York. So if you think because you've been to New York, you can find your way around, incorrect. You cannot find your way around. Your car could also run out of gas, which is no fun to pay for gas. Gas is outrageously expensive, by the way. It's unbelievable. Everything in this game costs a ton. Although gas is $1 a gallon, it doesn't sound that bad, but you go through gas. Your car must be... This thing goes through the gas like an old Lincoln or something. It's a big, a big massive car. You also have to, if your car gets damaged, you have to go get it from the garage. That's going to cost you. Everything costs you. So what do you do once you actually get to a spot you're supposed to go? That's when the mini games kick in, Brent. And by the way, your car can be towed while you're playing a mini game. Yeah. And the game will tell you your car is being towed. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, someone who did this had to have been to New York, because this reminded me of that Simpsons when Homer goes to
New York. Absolutely.
It's very similar to that. So let's talk about these mini games. It will tell you to visit certain areas. For example, let's say visit the post office. Okay. You go to the post office and then you are treated with a mini game. Now, in the case of the post office, holy smokes, what a fevered acid trip this thing is. Where you have to get your envelope, get it stamped, and work your way across this unbelievably difficult line of just repeated lines of crap. So hard, Brent. Did you ever beat any of these mini games?
Three of them.
Three. I bet I can guess the ones. Did you? I'm guessing you beat the one where you had to eat the hamburgers.
Yep.
Let me think here. You didn't beat Post. And there's no way you beat Central Park.
No.
There's a 0% chance. I'm saying you also beat maybe the subway.
Nope.
Okay. Well, what you beat. I'd be interested to know.
I beat the Mart, where you have to put the pretzels in the corner.
Yeah.
I beat the automat where you eat the hamburgers.
Right.
And I beat there was one, I can't remember the location, but you have to climb up ladders to get to a pretzel at the top. And
I think that's the subway.
And I also could rob the bank. Or no, you don't rob the bank. You're getting money from the bank while it's being robbed.
Oh, that's the World Trade Center with the pretzel. So this game, there are quite a few mini games in it. And I would love to sit here and describe them to you, but it's really hard to describe them.
Yeah.
I'll try to describe some of them. Because, like, for example, the post office, I could not describe that in a million years. It's just a crazy. It's crazy.
It is.
The easiest ones to describe, I'd say, was Central Park. Central Park, you're in there, and you're basically corralling what I assume are dogs, although they look more like goats or sheep. And yeah. What you've got to do is you're basically laying down a fence, and you've got to lay the fence down and separate them all, right? And if you get two together, whatever, you got to start over. This sucked. I never did this one. I could never successfully do this one.
I got it down to half the animals and then lost.
That's
horrible. It gets easier as you go because the animals are already, you know, fenced off.
Right.
But it's every time you get hit by an animal, you get fined $50 and you have to basically, you don't start again, but it resets your character's position on the screen.
Yeah. The we're actually, if you're watching the video, the one we're looking at now, I believe this was in the Trade Center. This is where we had to take pretzels to the four corners of the screen while the walls of the screen rotate and continuously. And also, there are people there trying to get you. This was not the hardest one. Actually, this is one I did beat after a spell, because the one thing is the people are slow. When you go to the bank, there are just lines and lines of bank robbers shooting guns.
Yeah.
And you've got to negotiate your way past them. I believe we have to do that one twice. I mean, you could go to the bank to get more money, because yeah, money is
money
like
is your life.
Yeah. Money is your life in this game. The automat is where you go for lunch. Now, this is a strange one. You have to go there and you have to eat, I believe it's 10 hamburgers, Brent. But there's a guy standing around in there, right? So when they serve you the hamburgers, they just appear on the screen. And you've got to go over and eat them before, and that guy will go eat them too. And I believe the hamburgers cost like $20 a piece.
Yeah.
So they got the pricing right on this one, because that's about what I would figure you would pay in New York for a hamburger these days. But this jerk goes around and eats them. And you've got to eat the hamburgers before he does it. Now, whenever he eats one, that's $20 it just cost you. And well, I mean, you're not a millionaire.
The best thing to do is buy four or five hamburgers, and they'll all appear at the same time.
Yeah.
And whatever direction the guy goes, you go the other way, try to get the other hamburgers. It sucks so hard to buy a hamburger, and the guy is between you and the hamburger, and he just waltzes over and eats it right in front of you.
Yeah. It's very irritating, to say the least. So I never came close to beating this game. I can tell you that right now.
God, no.
or anything. The game has there's a lot of atmosphere in the game. I mean, the sound effects are pretty good. They do a good job sort of simulating like city sounds, like traffic.
Yes.
They do a good job. You occasionally will hear the chimes of like a clock, you know, which I assume that's when it strikes the hour. To be honest with you, I never pay attention, but you can tell there's a tune that plays. It's sort of like almost like a ragtime type tune, isn't it, Brent?
Yep.
But it's good. It's a good tune. It's hard to say what is good and what's not good about this game. The concept is great. I'll give them that. The overarching driving around the town part is okay. It can be irritating because every city block, every street on the city also has these like bumpers in the middle of it, or cones that you can't you that
manholes. That you I'm pretty sure they're manholes.
They're not manholes.
Yeah,
I don't know what
they're spaced
are.
Out like manholes.
Well, there's a lot of them, and so you're always inevitably you're going to hit those. And occasionally,
well, no, I don't agree with that. They're pretty easy to dodge. They're always in the middle of the road, so as long as you stay in a lane, you're fine.
I drive like a maniac. I don't pay attention to that. There's also occasionally wrecks in town where two cars will just hit it, and they're wrecked, you know, which is kind of cool. It simulates traffic.
Two or three or six or eight. I saw massive pileups when I played.
The fact that you could get out of your car and walk around, pretty cool. There's other pedestrians walking around. That's kind of neat. I liked it. I mean, at the time, if I had played this back in the day, which I will say, this is one I never came across, I would have been very impressed, because one of the dreams I had as a kid was a game where you could walk around this town and be able to go into every building, you know, which I always thought that would be cool, because it's just like real life, because you always played games in front of cityscapes where you couldn't go into the city. You
right.
know what I'm saying? So I kind of like that. Now, I watched a video from a fellow that did a real in-depth look at this. And one of the things he did was, he let his car set on the bridge. You can't get out of your car on the bridge that comes into town. So at the very beginning of the game, he let his car sit there until it ran out of gas to see what would happen. Well, what happens is the game glitches out, and you can go into basically like a glitchy town where all kinds of crazy stuff's happening. So if you want to see the glitch-a-mania, that's what you do. Apparently, there's a way to get there from the normal map too, but I don't know exactly how you would do it. The game, I should mention that the opening screen of this game has an awesome picture of like the New York skyline with like King Kong up there, stomping around, which is pretty cool. And when you finish the game, you get a ranking, basically. And the ranking's always like, it's not kind. Let's just put it that way. But I don't know. I kind of dug this, Brent. Is this one you would come back to play?
All right, Aaron. It's time for a little bit of real talk.
Okay, go ahead, man.
This might be my absolute new favorite Atari 1200 XL game, or Atari 8-bit computer game.
Oh.
The atmosphere that this provides, and you can tell when they were developing this, they wanted you to be frustrated. They wanted things to happen that frustrated you. Because the whole thing is, you're a tourist from Iowa in New York, okay? And the whole game is based around frustrating you. The mini games, the driving around, the parking, the towing, there's a pay lot you can park in, and you get charged like every 15 minutes you're there. Every bit of it is about frustrating the player, just to the point where they're frustrated, but they want to get better. And as I played this game, I got better and better and better. Unlike Electrician, which is a great game, don't get me wrong, everyone should go play it. But I very early on, I hit the peak of what I felt I was going to be able to do. In New York City, I never felt like I hit that peak. I got frustrated every time I was taking too long on a mini game and my car would get towed. I'd get frustrated every time I'd be driving down the street and that stupid jerk in his hot rod car would hit me and send me to the hospital. I'd get frustrated, but I loved every single minute of it. The game just so finely skates this line between unfair and I'm going to get it this time. As you progress and you get farther on and get different mini games, the first time you walk into a mini game, more than likely you're going to be confused and overwhelmed and not know what's going on. And you're going to run into something that you're not supposed to, and you're going to get fined $50. And get pushed back to the beginning of the level, and it's going to suck. But you're going to keep going at it and going at it until you get better at it. I absolutely loved everything about this game. I think it captured what it was trying to capture to an absolute T. The atmosphere is so perfect. I cannot stress enough how much I want everyone to go out and play this game right now.
Wow. Ringing endorsement.
Oh, so what my you're gosh.
Is, what you're saying is the anguish, the agony, the frustration, the expense, everything baked into this game is to simulate an actual trip to New York City.
Absolutely. And I think,
can't deny that, having been to New York.
I think because the first time I loaded this thing up, I just drove around the city and I couldn't figure out where to park, because you can't just park on the street. You have to park in little inlets in front of buildings. So I parked in front of a building and I was just kind of walking around, not even going to a mini game. I was just kind of walking around and I see this tow truck come hook up to my car and start driving off my car.
Yep.
And I'm chasing down the road after him. You know, you can't catch him because he's driving car speed and you're running. And I get to the impound lot and they make me pay to get my car back out of the impound lot. Perfect. It's all so well done and it has this incredible feel and atmosphere. I'm going to play that. I'm not going to say I'm going to beat it because the game is incredibly hard, but I'm going to play this game until I can get as far as I possibly can. I loved it. I can't wait to get back to it.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm pleased, Aaron, enjoyed that so much.
To me, this is Yeti level good.
Oh man, high praise indeed. Let's see what our listeners thought of this one, Brinster. The boat came back with another look. He writes, "Wow, another winner! Bizarro week should be every week." This may be the earliest example of a true open-world driving game. Unlike Turbo Esprit for the Speccy, you can actually get out of your car, go into buildings, and do various missions. Before I read the instructions, I was confused. I assumed you were in a taxi and you had to pick up people at the various locations, but not just visit them. After I read the instructions, everything made sense. The game is more than the sum of its parts. The driving sections are not exactly thrilling, and the mini-games inside the buildings look and move like something straight out of the VCS. But the atmosphere of the game is incredible. If you have any love for the Atari 8-bit line, play this game. Above average. From the boat. So, he dug it. He was into it, man.
It's and terrific. I will say, it's so good.
I did price this thing. There were none available on eBay at the time of this review. But I saw the disc that had both today's games sell for $31 for the discs and the instruction sheet. I would wager, in fact, I know for sure, you can go grab the ROMs for this at your leisure. They are out there and plentiful. So I would agree, both these games are probably definitely worth a look.
If I got this bundle as a kid, I would be so ecstatic after playing them for 15 minutes to know I got two awesome games. I think this originally sold, Aaron, I saw packaging for $3. Did you find that as well?
I didn't see that. Now, this, I did see that this game was released over in the UK on tape. And I saw a lot of people that had the tape of this game. I don't think it actually, I don't know if it came with an electrician or not, but this was on the cover. But I did see some boxes that mentioned electrician and this game. If the tape had both, you're fine. And if you've got the disc, you're fine. Either way, you're good to go. And if
oh my gosh.
If you're just emulating, just go grab the ROMs.
This they might be the best bundle of software up to like Mario and Duck Hunt.
Holy smokes.
It's so good, people.
My God. Listen, while he's in a good mood, let's get over to the wheel. Oh. All right, Brent.
Please, Mr. Wheel, can we have another easy week?
Oh, no. I told Brent we're almost out of pie pieces. So these are all the pieces that I've avoided for the past several months. There is no escape. They must be put on now.
Except for the lock pieces. Please, yes, lock piece.
The games the machines I added this week are Retro Rewind. This week will be the Sega SG-1000, Brent, and the new piece we've added, which again I've never heard of this thing, the Gamot / Super Child Prodigy. Sounds hideous. It sounds absolutely hideous.
Let's please spin don't sucker. Spin that.
Well, it had to happen eventually. We've been dodging this pie piece for a long time. We have rolled the Mega Duck / Cougar Boy. Brent, you idiot. You absolute moron. What is the Cougar Boy? What was it here? The Cougar Boy / Mega Duck. What is that?
This is another dive into the realm of handhelds. I do believe this is a Brazilian handheld.
Oh, boy. You know it's gold.
So, we got a little bit of Mega Duck Cougar Boy action coming.
I will say the Brazilians have good taste in what they keep around. They kept around the Odyssey 2 for a long time. They kept around the Master System for a long time. So, we'll see what the... I'm not going to lie. The names don't make me optimistic. My friend, the Mega Duck, not good. Now, that's Aaron, a horrible name.
Would you like to dress up as Mega Duck and Cougar Boy next week?
You could be Mega Duck. That's all I'm saying. Because I'm not even tempting that one. Hey, thanks for joining us, everyone. Bridget, how do you think you want to close the show with this afternoon?
If you're interested in a lanyard, throw us an email. If we can get enough interest, we'll put an order together. And the links will be down in the description. Few shout outs here in chat. I'm going to start with the lurkers. We got 3D Code Warrior. We got a little bit of Itron 5. We got Jost 80, and we grab one more here, Toy Moy. And then some of the folks in chat that's been chatting with us, we've got Rashi, Paul Kitching, Picard, Frodo, Geo's Lake, Mitsuyama. And I know I'm missing people.
It's a murderer's row of users. All the classics here.
Also, if you have a, if you are a subscriber through Anchor, or if you are a Patreon subscriber through the Amigos, get in your pick this week for Thanksgiving wheel pieces. We need to get those in, people. So if you are interested in putting a piece on the wheel, that will absolutely 100%, no questions, get spun. Now's the time. So if there's something, a category or a system that you want us to play, get it in, and we are going to be guaranteeing that you'll see it, saying we can emulate it, for our Thanks for Giving marathon. Let's Aaron, anything
about,
else?
Yeah, I've got a few things I want to discuss here. Let's talk about dates while we're talking about things. So this year...
Well, I mean, you're not really my type.
Take off. This year, ARG's Thanks for Giving marathon will take place, of course, the day after Thanksgiving. It's a Friday, November 27th. November 27th this year, it'll be our marathon of games, playing the wheel pieces that you sent in. We had a good time last year. It should be fun again. I also want to mention that tentatively scheduled, it's coming back, Brent. The people have spoken. International Computer Club.
Yes.
Is
tentatively was a scheduled ton of fun.
For Saturday, December 12th. At 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you are interested in making your voice heard on that time or any other time that you would like to see International Computer Club right now, but that's the tentative one. We're hoping we can get as many people as we can to show up for International Computer Club. One last bit of business, Brent, before we take this to the hizzy. I got wrist slapped this week for my illegal bootleg use of the theme for the wheel. If you're not in the UK, you won't recognize that theme. But if you are, you know that it's the beautifully rendered version of the opening theme for Tales of the Unexpected. I love that show. I mean, I love it. And I love that theme. There's a chick out there dancing in front of the theme. It's great. However, YouTube didn't like it. In fact, our video last week was like banned in like Portugal or something because I used it, despite the fact that I've been using it for literally years. So we are looking to integrate new music into the show and unfortunately take the place of the wheel theme and the opening theme, which is also sort of loosely, brutally borrowed and torn from someone else, from another piece of music that's even more obscure than the theme from Tales of the Unexpected. But you never know when they're going to come get you. So look for some decent tunes, some changing of the tunes here in the next couple weeks. But that's something you're going to get to look forward to, I guess. We'll hopefully replace the Tales of the Unexpected theme with something equally as cool, if that is possible. That's all I got, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for showing up for our Atari week. We'll be back next week with the Mega Duck / Cougar Boy. And until then, I bid you quack.
Thanks for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Quick shout out to all of our YouTube subscribers and Twitch followers. A special thank you to Duncan Styles for our vector graphics and BartBit for our amazing music. Would you like to keep ARG spinning for as little as a dollar a month? You can do so at anchor.fm/ARG-presents. Supporters get entry into the Amigos Discord channel, as well as their name called out in the credits. Supporters like these fine folks: Z9K9, Anthony Jarvis, Graham W. Vetke, Terry Howard, Gary Heather, John Schaller, The Slow Norris, Frodo NL, Steve Rasmussen, Chris Folds, Mitsuyama, Retroalgae, Hermsky, John Deckman, and Jerry Dennington. Don't want to explain another credit card bill? That's okay too. You can help us out by leaving us a positive review on Spotify and Apple iTunes. Have an idea for a wheel piece? Send it to us at argpresents@mail.com. We record live every Sunday at 9 a.m. EDT on Twitch. Hope to see you there.